It's been a really tough month. It's been a really tough 2 years, I would think. And many of these people, many of the people in this room and in the sound of my voice, which I give greetings to everyone who's watching on the telecast, they've seen affliction. So what do you do when you're tempted to just give up? When you're afflicted and it's painful and it's like, I can't do anything more. Well, the Bible offers a unique view, a view that we may not have thought of. So I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about that today, talking a little bit about a certain kind of hope. And to illustrate, I'd like to go back and use a biblical time capsule. And we're going to go back to 29 AD or AD 29, if you like the common era. You can use that 29 CE. And we're going to go to a little tiny city near Mount Tabor in Galilee, the northern part of Israel, Judah. This little village we visited, we're going to visit by town travel, has about 200 people in it. And everybody knows everybody, kind of like our congregation. And the name of the little city we're going to visit is actually called Green Pasture. It's not referred to that. The Hebrew name is in the Bible. In Green Pasture, we can see Mount Tabor nearby, which stands on the horizon at a little over 1,800 feet. We're also not very far, as you saw on the map, in the Sea of Galilee. Life in the little village that we're going to visit by time capsule is simple. And mostly, those families that have lived there either all their lives or most of their lives. There are no cell phones, there's no iPhones, there's no tablets, there's no internet, and there's no Fox News or MSNBC. Most houses are small and probably have a ladder or stairs to climb up to the roof when it gets hot. When residents get up in the morning, there's no running water. All they have is a little pitcher to splash on their face to help them wake up. In the tiny city we're going to be visiting by our biblical time capsule is now controlled by the Romans under King Herod Agrippa, who has quite a history. And he hasn't been ruling for very long, but oftentimes he'll have armies marching around trying to secure territories from his brothers and his other family members who they quite didn't all get along really well. So one of the Jewish men who lives in a tiny green pasture village climbs this mountain every holy day to set a fire on top of it. That will let everybody in the northern part of Galilee know that a holy day is underway and it's time to observe it. A holy day has come. A few months earlier in this very mountain, some people probably saw a huge crowd come through because there was a lot of people, and then they might have actually seen some flashes on top of this mountain prior to our story. And the Bible records those flashes as what we know as the transfiguration of Jesus Christ on Mount Tabor. But that's a different story. This morning is not an ordinary morning. This is where the trip in our little biblical time capsule gets sad, if you haven't already picked up on where we are. But don't worry, it has a happy ending. This morning, everyone in our tiny little village is getting ready to go to a funeral. And this funeral is a particularly sad one. In this little small town of village of Green Pasture, a very bad thing happened. Years earlier, a young wife bore a son, which of course was a very happy event. But then something happened to her husband. What was probably a major tragedy, he died. His young wife became a widow. And in the first century, as many of you know well, that was a bad thing. It's always a bad thing to lose a mate, especially with a family and a young child. But in that time, in that community, in that culture, it was a really bad thing. Because what that meant was, if you lost your husband and you were a woman, you didn't have women's rights, you didn't have jobs, you didn't have things we have today. You were pretty much dependent on your son or your family and whoever had family members in the region. So if that wasn't the case, it was pretty bad. No such thing as federal family assistance, food stamps, Social Security, or government aid. So back to our story, it looked like everything might work out. The young boy grew into a man, and like many others before him, he cared for his mother and kept things going. But then things got worse. Grim tragedy struck again. Just when people thought things couldn't get any worse for this small family, they did. The young man died. And the whole city, did I just kill this? Mike Kubik to the rescue. The whole city probably had compassion on this young widow, now stripped, and thank you, Mike Kubik, and all those watching. It's amazing we have highly competent people running technology here. Now stripped of her child, and in the long run, her substance was also stripped for a reasonable quality of life. Her parents were gone. There was no place to go. So traveling in our time capsule, you may wonder what happened, you know, and since it's a biblical story, where was God in all this? Where was God in letting all this happen, and why would he let such a terrible thing happen? If you were a young girl living in this village, you probably went with your mother to help prepare for the funeral and actually put together the clothes to wrap the body in. There were special things Jewish custom required, and you would have been a participant in that in helping this widow get ready because she obviously couldn't do it on her own. There's explicit details about how the dead are to be buried, so preparation had to be made quickly after the death. So it wasn't a good day at all. The widow pretty much had no hope. A lot of grief, a lot of affliction. And the whole city came out to help her bury her son. And as we watch from our time capsule, we can imagine the anguish and the pain and the affliction. It was a bad day. People were waiting. The grave was already done. But then, something unusual started to happen in our story. A great cloud appeared on the horizon. That meant a lot of people were walking towards this tiny village, which was very unusual. More often than not, such a cloud meant marauders or an army or something that necessarily wasn't very good. It could be a gang of thieves. At any rate, the rabbi looked like he decided to accelerate the funeral procession because these people were descending on this tiny village en masse. So you and I watched the grieving group start to go out to the village in our time capsule. We see the grieving, sobbing mother. And in front of this crowd, though, there was a man and a little subgroup of people. It was altogether a very unusual sight. So do you remember what happened in the biblical account? What would be regarded as a complete violation of ritual and tradition, this man who was leading them authoritatively moved by himself toward the mother. Great confusion would have resulted because this didn't happen. This was not permitted under Jewish law. So they probably stumbled to a stop. So revealing a tear-streaked face, the widow looked helplessly at the man, wondering what he could want. And the man, whose face was full of compassion, simply said to the woman, "Don't cry." Then, as you and I watch from this biblical time capsule, the entire village looks on in amazement. As the man turns and authoritatively strides over to the coffin, which again was not permitted. You couldn't touch a dead thing. The entire crowd looked on, wondering in astonishment what in the world was going to happen. Surrounded by this big crowd of people, the man placed his hands on the coffin. And he says, "Young man, I say to you, arise." And then in one of the most powerful miracles of the Bible, the man, clothed in head linen, hands tied together, sat up. Not only did he sit up, he started speaking. So the young man waits till the coffin's lowered to the ground, his feet are freed, his hands are untied. So what happens? Then the great story comes to a terrific end. Jesus Christ gives the young man back to his mother. This, of course, is the miraculous account of our Savior in the 7th chapter of Luke. And that's our time capsule for this story. And as has been humorously and profoundly said, Jesus wrecked every funeral he ever attended. So notice what it says in Luke 7, verse 16, as we get to our main point. God's purpose was achieved through this woman's terrible suffering. She had no idea why it happened to her. She had no idea. The village probably didn't understand why. But a great prophet has appeared among us, and Jesus Christ was confirmed in front of all these people, his power and his status as the Son of God. And the message was, God has come. He has sent his son, the Messiah, to help his people. So what does that have to do with us today? What value does it have if you're in the middle of a trial or deeply discouraged or lost a mate or had a terrible operation or faced cancer or whatever? The Robert Alter translation of the Book of Lamentations, which I've quoted from before, says it well for many of us. Verse 1 of chapter 3, a chapter uniquely marked by the use of triple acrostics for emphasis, we read, "I am the man who has seen affliction." There are many in this congregation who could say, "I am the man, I am the woman, I am the person who has seen or is in affliction." So what is our pathway out of that? Many of us are seeing affliction. The widow who had lost everything, her husband and son, probably felt hopeless. Even beyond hope. She probably cried out to God, say, "Why? When am I going to be able to eat again? Am I going to be able to sleep? What's going to happen to me? Where am I going to go?" She was a person who had seen affliction. You may identify, if you're in that state of mind or you're in that state of situation or have been, you might relate to what it says in verse 16 of chapter 3 of Lamentations. "My life has abandoned peace. I forgot what is good." And I'm reading from the Robert Alter translation here. "And I thought, my strength and my hope are lost." It goes on with even more difficult situations. "Recall my affliction and my wandering," the person cries out to God. "Wormwood and poison, terrible things. My very life does recall and bends down within me, upon me." Other versions say, "My soul is downcast," or "bowed down, doubled over with emotional pain and affliction and terrible trial." A lot of people have been there. A lot of people might be here right now within the sound of my voice. If you've ever experienced this, if you ever experienced having your mind blown up with an anxiety attack, or frozen painfully in a grip of depression, or grief, or experienced depths of anguish over the loss of a mate, a parent, or a child, faced a challenging disease or a loss of job, you are the person who can say, according to the biblical definition, "I am a man of affliction." So what's the pathway? Here's our point. The widow, the village in Green Pasture, also known as Nan, experienced that kind of deep affliction. She cried out to God. But here's the main point. During her affliction, she did never, ever think or imagine the profound solution that God had in store for her. God had a solution that would not only ease her pain and solve her problems in an incomprehensibly powerful way, he had a solution that would dramatically magnify his will and achieve his purpose. I doubt very much that widow prayed that morning, "God, please send the long-awaited Messiah to this tiny, non-consequential village and resurrect my son." I don't think that happened. But that's what God had in mind. So if you're in the middle of affliction, here's the point. What's God got in mind for you? How is he going to use your affliction to achieve his purpose? Because God doesn't do anything without a purpose. So here's our takeaway. Let's look at the middle of chapter 3 in Lamentations, because it tells us what to do. It tells us the condition to stay in. And remember, Lamentations was written after the worst disaster in Israelite Jewish history. The temple had been destroyed, many people had been killed, and they were all going into captivity. The unimaginable had occurred. So let's look at chapter 3. "Thus I answer in my heart," this is our pathway, again coming out of the Robert Alter translation. "Thus I answer to my heart, therefore I yet hope. The Lord's kindness is not ended, for his mercies are not exhausted. He still is in control. They are renewed every morning. Every day is a new day. Great is your faithfulness," the author says. So what's the solution? "My portion is the Lord," I said. "Therefore, I don't give up. Therefore, even though it's painful, even though I've got to face terrible, hard things, I yet hope." And what's the status of that person? Good is the person who seeks him out. Finally, what happens? Good for us that you believe, hope in silence, for rescue is from the Lord. To wait for that rescue. So the implication there is rescue is coming. It's not a meaningless affliction. It has purpose. When we have seen affliction, pain, and suffering, we are to yet hope. And if we yet hope, if we continue to seek God, and if we yet hope when we think we're hanging by our fingers, when we have the unbreakable promise that God's kindness is not ended, His mercies are not exhausted, we will be renewed in the morning, and we will be rescued. For those of you who know affliction, and at the sound of my voice, or have experienced it, or anticipate it, the Messiah is coming for you. Let us hope patiently.